are listening to the Hey Presley podcast. This is episode number 17 with Tiffany Armstrong. Today's episode features a truly remarkable woman who has taken her journey and the challenges that she's faced and turned them into a vehicle for empowering women in a very tactical way. I won't tell her story for her, and I promise that we get into it super quickly in the beginning of this interview, but in short, Tiffany Armstrong was attacked and she was able to get away using very minimal self-defense techniques. From that experience, she was forced to find ways to get out of the victim mentality, and she shares those strategies that she learned here on this interview, and those can be really useful no matter what trauma you're facing in your life. And then she also has since become an expert on self-defense, knowing what attackers look for in terms of people on the street or people out and about and in your homes, helping you physically defend yourself, how to spot danger, and everything in between. She gives super practical, tangible tips and advice. You guys know I love that stuff. And she just has an incredibly inspirational story. I was really moved by this interview, and I hope you enjoy it. Tiffany, thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited. I know Tommy connected us, and he was on one of my previous shows, and him and Taylor were on, they own Living in Flow, so they were on one of my episodes, and Tommy's so great at that. He, like, sees two people that would, like, totally get along and is like, you two should talk.
Absolutely.
Like, whatever comes of it.
I've seen him do it several times
already. Yeah, he's good at that, so I'm so glad he connected us. And there's so many places I could start, but I think... And we probably won't work chronologically because I have a lot of different questions I want to ask you. But first, can you kind of introduce like what you do now for work, but then what you were doing before that as well, kind of your journey professionally?
Sure, sure. Well, what I am doing is launching a business currently, and it's a self-defense business. And I think one of the things that drove me to self-defense was something that I'm sure we'll talk about, but I was attacked at one point. And so I have just been on this journey of for 20 years teaching self-defense, but one of the things that lit me up recently is I just have heard so many stories in the last maybe 6 months, more than normal, of all these people getting attacked. And so it's just driven me to launch this business. So I'm sure we'll get into that. But what I was doing, what I'm currently doing with my family business is a locksmithing and security company. And way back when I was attacked again, the guy snuck into the house, and it was not secured properly. And so when my parents started launching this locksmithing business, it became a massive passion of mine to help people on the other end of things. And it's amazing how easy a burglar can get in if you don't know how to secure your house properly. So I have been doing that, and then it's called Pop Lock Locksmiths, and we do my the fun part of it for me is the community service part. We do a ton of things for domestic abuse shelters and helping veterans transition from military life to civilian life. And then we have a program called PAL Saves Kids, where we unlock car doors for free for children or pets locked in vehicles. And especially in Arizona, as hot as the temperatures get, it is a matter of 10 to 15 minutes before that child is, you know, in severe danger. And so we get there typically before the police and unlock the car door for free. So besides all the, of course, helping people's businesses and, you know, residents get secure, we do a lot for the community as well.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
So did your parents start this business coming off of that experience that you had, or did they already have this business? Like, how did those two correlate?
Yeah, you know, they are business people through and through, and they're just extraordinary, and everything they do is based on their heart and trying to give back to either, you know, giving some employees jobs and helping their families, or even you know, just giving back to the community. And so they actually looked at my stepmom's in banking, and so she's still in banking, and my dad is retired, and so they come from the corporate world, and they looked into about 12 to 15 different franchises, and they just looked at what they could make the biggest impact in the community, and as well as create a nice business and a good place for employees to be. So they chose Pop-A-Lock out of all the 12 to 15 franchises that they looked at.
That's so cool. And are you from here? Do your parents live here? Is that business based here?
It is based here. It's a franchise, so we own the whole Maricopa County area. But I grew up in the Chicago area. I was born in Texas, but left when I was about 5, and so all my roots are there. And then I grew up in the Chicago suburbs, and then spent about 10 years in Wisconsin.
Wow, everywhere.
For school, and then I came out here about 4.5, 5 years ago now, and I love it. I will never go back to snow.
I was going to say, you've been ever, to places ever, with ever. Some very different weather.
That's exactly right. I love it. And I love it. I love Phoenix because it's just a melting pot of people. I think a lot of people aren't from here. And so it just feels like a very accepting community, you know, when you just meet people from everywhere. There's not as much judgment as other places. And totally. It just feels really good and homey here.
Yeah. So I'm born and raised here. And whenever I meet people, they're like, really? You are like actually really? From here? Because nobody's from here.
You
like,
so rarely hear that.
Everybody migrates to here.
That's exactly right.
That's so cool. And it's so funny that you say you've been doing self-defense like 20 years. I mean, when people see your picture, you look like 25.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. I got about 13 years on that.
So can you, we won't prolong it too much longer.
Sure.
Can you expand a little bit on the story about you being attacked?
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. Well, I was in college and I went to an acquaintance's house, so I really didn't know them very well. I went with a couple of friends of mine. And so we were just sitting around. There's about 10, 12 of us just in the living room having a couple beers and just some appetizers and things. And so we're just sitting there and I didn't know who belonged there and who didn't. I just had met everybody. And so the door opens behind me, the front door. And so I turned around to look and see who it was. And it's about a 6'4" guy, oversized sweatshirt, looked like he was on drugs. But I didn't know if that was the person's brother or somebody who belonged there.
Obviously, you necessarily assume that
not some random person walking in. So I just assumed he belonged there for a second. But I turned around, I saw just panic and fear on everybody's faces because they all knew he didn't belong there. They didn't know who he was. And so I turned around and looked at my friends and then my heart dropped. I thought, who is this guy? And so within seconds, he just walked in like he belonged there. You know, he just walked in, he made his way right around the couch and he did pass a couple of my friends, or acquaintances, I should say. And then he just plopped on the couch and stuck his hand down my shirt, started licking my neck. I mean, just started accosting me in front of everybody. And the weirdest part for me was that everybody there was still frozen. Like, they were just, every single person there frozen. Nobody hopped up to try to help me. And so within, obviously, a couple seconds, I tapped the guy off of me. And I thought, okay, well, we don't know if he has a gun or a knife or what his deal is. He was clearly on drugs. So that was startling in itself. And so I just tapped him a little bit. And I said, hey, look, it doesn't seem like anybody knows you here. But we have just a ton of beer and food. And we can send you... I didn't say a care package, but we were, and he actually took me up on that part. And so, he started shoving beers in his pockets and he actually left. So that was the first part of the attack. And so, dumb us did not call the cops. That was our one big mistake. We just thought this guy wandered in. It was so inappropriate what he did, but we just, we just thought he got lost and he was on drugs.
Kind of gone, so I could see how you might think like, well, what are we going to tell him that this happened? It's not like we're expecting them to come do anything necessarily.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't want to go outside and try to find the guy and track him down for the police. So no, thank you. So we went around and locked all the doors and everything like that. And so it was, I think it was, this part gets a little bit foggy for me time-wise, but it was about a half hour later or so. And we were all obviously in the living room like, oh my gosh, can you believe that just happened? What on earth? I was asking, hey, why didn't anybody help me? Just kind of actually giving them a little bit of crap versus being all emotional about it. But I was like, what is happening? A piece of that is one of my friends that was there was a fourth degree black belt and he froze in fear still. So that's one of the things I'm so passionate about is you can learn every technique in the world, but until you get your mindset right about it and understand your own fear response, that was just absolute proof that techniques are just techniques. Yeah. You have to understand, and know how to use them, but get your mind right about it. So about a half hour later, I was just walking down the hallway. So there's the living room, a long hallway, and then the kitchen, and there's a bathroom in the hallway. So I was just walking down the hallway, completely oblivious to anything, and some hands reached out of the bathroom and grabbed me and pulled me in, and it was him. And he shut the door, and he started slamming me up against the door and telling me he was going to rape and kill me and find my family and all this kind of stuff. He's going to go through my purse and find my address. He was just saying everything. And all that was probably 15 seconds. But he was grabbing me so hard, his fingers were literally inside my arms, like inside my skin. I was just bleeding. And so I had been to a couple kickboxing classes before that. So I knew how to punch a bag. It was for exercise. I was trying to lose weight at the time. But one of the instructors, it was also a martial arts studio, one of the instructors had come in, the owner actually, had come in and just shown us three moves just for fun, like to, because he was obviously, you know, trying to teach us some martial arts and see if we were interested in the other classes. But so I had just learned three very basic moves, like a breakaway and just how to distract somebody and then where to strike. I mean, it was so basic. And so that just popped in my head. And that was 2 weeks before my attack. So I just learned it. I had no martial arts experience whatsoever. I just started kickboxing. So I just used him. You know, I broke out of his grip. You know, I got his hand off of one of my arms and then I distracted him low. So I can't remember if I stomped on his foot or kicked at his knee or shin or something, yeah. But I did something. And when you kick low like that, they try to avoid it and their face comes at you. So that's the whole plan. You think about martial arts in twos or self-defense in twos. You want to distract low and strike high, or distract high and strike low. This is the way the human body works, right? So I broke out of his grip, distracted him low, and then I just threw my hand up. I actually wasn't even like perfect palm strike to the nose, but I just threw my hand up at his face and it just jarred him enough. And it ended up breaking his nose, I found out later. I had no idea in the moment, but he was on drugs. I don't really think he felt the broken nose, but what happened was his head snapped back and he fell and he just lost his balance. And so it allowed me to just get out. Yeah, exactly. So I was holding the door and my buddy was walking down the hallway and saw the blood all over. And he said, "What happened? What's going on?" And I said, "He's in here." So we called the cops and they came out and he had been wanted for two rapes and an attempted homicide. So he was a real deal, you know? And, the biggest thing that stood out to me out of the whole thing was that I don't know exactly how the cops got this information out of him, but the guy had been staring through the window at us and casing the home, and he chose me out of everyone there. So I had to start digging into the field of victimology and understand how attackers choose their victims and like, why did he choose me? What was I doing to even give off a vibe? There were other women there. And so it was just like a, why did he choose me kind of thing. So I that's what I did my, you know, DebEx TED talk, yes. TED style talk on, because it's so important to understand what attackers are looking for in a victim.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that.
Yes.
Gosh, that's crazy.
And he went to prison with a broken nose, so that was good.
There you go. You didn't even realize how tough you were. How hard
I had no clue, but it was just something so basic that saved my life. It doesn't, martial arts or self-defense doesn't have to be fancy. Right. You know, it's like down and dirty how to get away from somebody. So it doesn't have to be overwhelming.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So do you think, because maybe you guys took a minute, and you might not even know the answer to this, but I'm wondering if other people wonder too. Do you think that he just came back in the house before you guys went around and locked the doors?
Oh, good question.
Or did he break in?
Yep. They think that we left a window open, a window unlocked. Because I remember asking, somebody asked, it wasn't me. Somebody asked the gentleman who lived there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who they said, "Did you lock all the windows?" And he said, "Our windows are always locked." And so he didn't go and check them. Mm-hmm. And so one of the windows happened to be unlocked. So that's how, because it wasn't forced entry anywhere. There was no broken windows or anything like that. So the cops thought he got in through a window. They did some analysis outside and saw where his footprints were or something like that. I actually didn't follow that part of the detail too much, but I just needed to break away from that a little bit emotionally at first. It traumatized me for about a year and a half or 2 years.
Oh,
just
my gosh,
really.
Imagine.
Yeah. So I've done a lot of work around that and I feel so much stronger. And now I can, you know, now I can speak to it really well.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I have so many follow up questions.
Sure.
But my first one is kind of on that kind of psychological, emotional. One of the things you and I were talking about off mic is this victim mentality that people can fall into when they have something like that, or so many scenarios, you know, that can happen in life that are so unfortunate. How did you get out of that? And how do you encourage other people who have been in similar situations to not always identify themselves as a victim, and not identify, because obviously that's a powerful part of your story, but just not always hold on to that so they can't move forward?
100%. I definitely have done some very strategic work around this myself, because I lived, my quick story is just that I was sexually abused as a child for 10 years, and then I ended up being attacked in college, and then I lived in victim mentality for so long with it, and I wasn't, outwardly people saw me as very strong, inwardly I felt like a victim. So what I was doing was self-sabotaging my life. I was setting myself up by getting into two actually different marriages that were both physically and verbally abusive. And it was just, the interesting part of it is that's definitely on them how they crossed the line, but what was on me was that I chose them for a reason, mm-hmm. and I was setting myself up to continue that victim mentality from my childhood. It's just, that's how it works, right? So when I really started breaking out of victim mentality was twofold. One is I started to understand what attackers look for in a victim. And one of the main things from, it's a study by Betty Grayson and Morris Stein. One of the big things that they look for in a victim is that they give off the vibe that they're a victim. So they're either slouching or walking slow or looking a little bit, you know, victim-like is really what it is, giving off the vibe of a lack of strength. And I never walked around with this, my, you know, I always felt like, oh, I look cocky if I'm walking so sure. tall and all that kind of stuff, or I think I'm all that. So I would kind of, I was such a people pleaser that I would kind of drop my breastbone a little bit, yeah. that kind of thing. Play small is exactly right. So when I read that study, the two things that they for sure look for in a victim is, number one is that the person's distracted. That's the obvious one. But number two is, it is their posture. And it's if they're giving off the vibe of strength, and are you walking and looking people in the eyes? Or are you avoiding eye contact? That kind of stuff. So I started walking taller after I read that study, obviously, because I never wanted that to happen again. But what I found was, at first it felt like an absolute act. You know, right. I didn't feel like I belonged in that tall, proper posture, you know what I mean? Confident posture, because I wasn't feeling very confident with myself at the time. So, but what was interesting over time is that that confident posture started to feel like home to me. And just that little bit of posture change actually changed how other people respected me, or how they responded to me. There was just a little bit of a difference of, you know, not talking down to me anymore, actually respecting me on a different sure. level. So something so simple as posture can not only wipe yourself off the victim list of an attacker, but can start to pull you out of victim mentality. And it actually changes the chemicals in your body. Just like
absolutely.
When we smile.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. I've seen, I think it's a TED Talk yeah. on that, about how they did some study, and I think they've done it with animals and people, mm-hmm. where they'll mm-hmm. test their hormones, and it's like, especially with gentlemen, like if they bring their shoulders back and bring their head up, mm-hmm. like it literally changes like their testosterone levels or something.
Yep.
Right?
Testosterone's increased and cortisol's decreased, the stress hormone. And so, and people, you know, we're energy, and people pick up on, I mean, we give off, you know, our different energy vibes, right? And so when we are walking like that and we have that chemical shift in our body, it's amazing. People will feel that difference in you. You know, we've all had that experience where somebody walk, like you're in a group and somebody walks into the room and you just feel this energy shift and they look so confident and you feel like, wow, I want to get to know that person, you know? It is not only just their posture, but it's also, you know, their hormonal shift in their own body that's actually landing for other people. So it's just an interesting thing.
Yeah.
But then the second thing that pulled me out of victim mentality, I think any coach ever should be coached themselves, right? So I see a life coach and I love him dearly, and for lots of different aspects of my life. But one of the things he said was, Tiffany, if you are ever feeling overwhelmed or hard on yourself or even cranky or, you know, whatever it may be, he said, just always think two things. Number one, that you have not done enough self-care, you know, and so, you know, doing whatever fills your cup. And then number two, it's that you've said yes to too many things. And so then he dug in on me and he said, so what do you do for self-care? And I just looked at him like he had two heads, because I was like, well, I don't even know what self-care is. You know what I mean? Because I just, you know, I always took care of everybody else. I was such a deep people pleaser that my needs came last. And so he's like, when's the last time you got a pedicure or massage or even just sat down with a girlfriend and just had a, you know, cup-filling mm-hmm. conversation? And I just couldn't even think of the last time. And so he said, he demanded that I went and got a pedicure. And so I went.
Doctor's orders, yeah.
Yeah, and so I was like, well, okay. So then I went there and I came back for my next appointment with that. And he said, so let me see your toes. And I said, here they are. And he goes, how was that for you? I said, it was really nice. And he said, you liar. And I said, I am lying. I said, it was so uncomfortable for me at first because yes. I didn't think I deserved to be pampered, you know. So it was really interesting. So that was the number one, was the self-care part. And then the number two was just learning to say no and setting healthy boundaries. And because I was such a deep people pleaser, I said yes to everybody but myself. And so, and I just, growing up and, you know, with the sexual abuse and everything like that, my soul survival depended on people liking me. So that's where you know, you choose the people pleasing route and say yes to everything. And so the challenge was that when I was saying yes to everything, I thought people were liking me because of that. And I thought they respected me because I was so nice to them and all that kind of stuff. So he made me for 1 week, an entire week, say no to every single request of me. Even the waitress walking up with water, you have to say,
like,
no,
going
no
all
thank
in
you.
On
yeah.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. And you could say, I mean, you're polite about about it and kind, but so every single thing. And so the people that I just thought I can never say no to, because I just take everything on, I started saying no to and just, oh, no, thank you. And I'd give them options. I'd say, oh, I'm so sorry, that doesn't work for me this week. But so either you can wait till next week and I'll get it done then, or you can take it on yourself, whatever works best for you. So I started to say that stuff, and the response was the exact opposite of what I expected. I just expected people to start being standoffish or whatever it may be. And everybody's respect level for me started raising. Yeah. And it actually broke down some walls for me between a couple people, because they started respecting me. And with people pleasers, you can't always trust everything that comes out of their mouth, because they sugarcoat everything. My past, I would sugarcoat everything, and I would just tell them what they wanted to hear, and right. I was kind of a chameleon with whatever they wanted me to be, I would be. And that's really hard to genuinely trust a person on that right. level and trust that they're going to speak their truth. So those three things, my posture way back in college when I learned that study changed, and that started that route for me. But then in the last 2.5, about 3 years ago, I started seeing that life coach and just started with my self-care and started to say no and set healthy boundaries and set time aside for myself and my friends and family. From that, I started to understand my own value. Just the power of saying no is one of the first things that really just jarred me and said, you know, you're worth saying no about, you know. So that's what builds your own value. And that was my route anyway. And so when you start saying no, you can't stay in victim mentality. You know what I mean?
And it's even power.
Yeah, exactly. And even that posture, that chemical shift, it's really, really hard to feel like a victim when you're standing tall in that proud stance or that confident stance. It's the exact opposite of victim mentality or victim feelings. And so those are main ones. Yeah.
I love that. A couple things that stuck out to me. One, I love that you talk about boundaries and saying no, because
yes.
something I heard on another podcast one time was the things that give you the most stress or anxiety are the things you have the least boundaries around.
Yes.
And I was like, wow, that's so good. Because if you think about, you know, work, are you always saying yes? Or with your family, are you always saying yes? Like the things that cause you the most distress are usually the things that you don't have enough. You're not saying no enough.
Yes, absolutely. That makes absolute perfect sense. And I could just, with my own journey, it just matches exactly what you just said. The things that stressed me out the most, I was the most people pleaser-y about.
Right.
That's not a word, but I'll use it anyway. But I 100% agree with you on that.
And obviously hindsight's always 20/20, right? Like you're able to see your journey and how it led to certain events or certain, realizations. But I love that your life coach challenged you in that way and said, made you go do the pedicure, but said, you know, who are you saying yes to? And I think those are things we often don't think about until somebody challenges us.
Absolutely. And he's just so, I'm just going to give a shout out. Kenny Weiss. Kenny Weiss is my life coach. I love him dearly. And he's helped me in so many ways. But yeah, just really taking a look at yourself and just where you have walls up. And he had me read a book, but there was walls that we hide behind versus healthy boundaries. So healthy boundaries is when you can just say no and comfortably. And then otherwise people think they're setting boundaries, but they're really putting up a wall in between the person. So there's a huge difference between walls and healthy boundaries.
Do you remember the name of the book?
That one, oh my gosh, I'm
if
so
you don't,
sorry.
I can get it from you later.
Yeah, you know what? I'll get that to you later. Sorry
about
that.
I know,
I have
so many that sometimes I'll like talk about something from it and I'm like, and I can't remember the name, but
I know.
I'll get it to you at some point.
I know.
That's,
and you know, along those lines too, do you know who Brene Brown is?
Oh, of course.
Okay, one of my favorite stories about her was that setting boundaries was that she went to make brownies she went to take her child to school, and this lady in the PTA ran up to her and said, hey, you know, for the bake sale tomorrow, can you make 12 dozen brownies or something? I mean, it was just a lot of brownies. I can't remember. And she just looked at the lady and with resentment in her voice already, she's like, sure, yeah, I have nothing else going on, you know, and she needed to do it by the next day. And she had a whole bunch of stuff going on. So she said yes, right? So then she goes home and she explains them the story, how she's beaten the brownie batter because she's mad about it. And then she gets to school the next day and pretty much throws them at the lady and says, here you go. You know, it took me a long time and and she had all this resentment. And so she tells that story in humor, obviously, to say what boundaries, and that was not her, you know, it wasn't the lady's fault, you know,
sure.
But she was getting resentment thrown at her. So what she realized is that she just needed to set a healthy boundary and say, I'm so sorry, I can't do that right now, but next time this comes up, let me know if you give me a little notice. And so what she does is she has this little bracelet with three little beads on it. And so every time somebody makes a request of her, she spins one bead and she says temporary discomfort or future resentment. And then she spins the second bead and says temporary discomfort or future resentment. She does that three times and she just, it settles with her for a second. And then she makes her choice to say yes or no. So I love that. So I've experienced that in my own life and my life coach obviously validated that in his teachings. Yeah. Right.
I think there's so much power in paying attention to how you're feeling in situations like that. And obviously it's not innate. I think it's a very much a learned trait. Mm-hmm. You know, when I encourage my clients in my nutrition coaching business to be mindful about certain things, it's very foreign. But, you know, the fact that self-care made you uncomfortable, I used to be the same exact
way. Really? Interesting.
And I really had to learn to wrestle with that. And I know a lot of similar kind of type A type people that also have that issue.
Sure.
And it's like, that's something you should pay attention to. It's not, you know, if you're actively avoiding something, instead of actively avoiding it, it's like, okay, why does going to get a pedicure make me uncomfortable? Mm-hmm. You know, or why does saying yes doesn't make you uncomfortable, but like while you're making the brownies, you're frustrated. Mm-hmm. And so like, if you can pay more attention to that, like, okay, why am I frustrated? It's because I said yes. Well, that's not the lady that asked me's fault, you know, and it opens up the door for you to ask yourself more questions just by being mindful about when you're uncomfortable, I think, why you're uncomfortable.
Yeah, 100% yes. And just even paying attention to the body sensations that happen. And if you start seeing the tense, the shoulders or the stomach, you know, things like that, and just being aware of those triggers. And then, like you said, being mindful and pausing and actually thinking about it. Most people just push through it. And
the beads are cool because it like forces you to pause.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I love that.
And so I know that you recently did do that TED style talk that you talked about. And you've got, I was looking on your Facebook page, you've got some really awesome content on there.
Thank you.
So at that event or in comments or messages that you get, what are some of the themes that you've identified? I'm sure some victims have shared their stories or people that are just inspired by your messages. Are there any like running themes that you've noticed with people?
100% yes. So because I've been doing this for 20 years and I've taught in a dojo and then I've also done a lot of seminars and taught school assemblies and just, you know, everything or in realtor groups. I do a lot of brokerages because they're
in homes.
Yep, they're homes with strangers. The stranger picked the home, so they have very unique situations. But with that, I've heard hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands of stories at this point. And almost every single time I teach something, somebody comes up and teaches or tells me a story. So I would say the couple of things that really stood out to me as a theme is that people always say, especially women, I wish I would have trusted my gut. I knew something was off and I still continued because I wanted to be polite and there's the lack of boundaries, right? And so they continued with the person, maybe a realtor walking through and feeling uncomfortable and they just continued based on, you know, this is my job kind of thing or just any situation where they saw a person and they felt uncomfortable about that person, but that, you know, they didn't go and get back in their car, for example. And so just trusting their gut. And when you feel like something's off, something is off. And what's the worst that can happen? And I just did a video series actually just on that specifically because women and men too, you know, they just want to be polite. So I do a demonstration of what's the worst that could happen. Like if somebody's walking behind you and you turn around and say, can I help you? You know, and just something where it's just like a boundary setting. Well, you might be saving your own life, right? By being aware and setting that boundary. But the second thing is, you know, what if he's just walking up to catch up with his wife or something? Then you just laugh about it and you move on with your day. And I've done that probably three or four times in my life where I set a boundary with somebody just because they were making me very uncomfortable. And they were just super innocent and we just laughed about it. And so it's never been like, what's wrong with you? And even if it was, I don't care, you know, my life is worth it. So it's just the trusting of the gut thing and actually taking an action on it and not worrying about being polite would be one of the main themes. And then the other thing is people just, it's really more on the domestic violence side of things. There's 80% of attacks happen from people we know.
Wow.
Which is horrendous, right? And so it's people, you know, you might just kind of know at a party, or it might be a spouse, or it might be, you know, somebody else. And so, so with that, really understanding de-escalation techniques, people just don't understand that. Like you just think you're with somebody you know. So it's like, you know, some people's arguments get a little off the rails, right? Well, it's just, it doesn't matter how well you know the person. You just really need to start understanding de-escalation techniques, you know, and not just understanding your own value. I say sit in your high value woman, you know, versus going a little girl tantrum and starting to interact in such a negative way and having the conversation escalate into a severe argument. So just really having people understand, you know, just their own value, keeping things high, their high vibe, and just understanding how would I put that? Just how to de-escalate situations, yeah. whether it's in public with somebody you don't know or within your own relationships.
Yeah. I love that you said, because my life is worth it. And I heard mm-hmm. you say that in one of your videos.
Mm-hmm.
And you said something to the effect of, it's going to take 2 minutes for me to go through this and you're worth it. And then you got into the video and it was like just enough to be like, wow, that's such a great point. Like mm-hmm. if you're going to learn anything, it seems like something to protect your own life is probably a pretty good investment.
That it is. You know? And you know that one of my good buddies, he's a 7th degree black belt, Mike Hayashi. And he, one of the things he talks about all the time is how women hesitate to save their own lives or hesitate to set a boundary. And there's lots of stories and they're kind of gruesome, so I won't get into them, but it's just a woman hesitating to pull a trigger or hesitating to make a move because she's scared to break his nose. And, you know, and so it's the big thing is he asks his, you know, his the people he teaches, he asks them, would you hesitate to save your life or would you hesitate to do this? And a lot of women say, yeah, I just don't know if I could just do that right away. And then he said, but what if you saw a man on top of a 3-year-old, would you hesitate? And they say, absolutely not. And they're like, he's like, how far would you go? And he would, you know, and they're like, I would kill him. I mean, they right. just get to the point where they would just go do whatever it took to save that child's, you know, that child from harm. But we hesitate to do it for ourselves. And so that is really a mind shift and really understanding our own value and that we are worth saving. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it you don't need to hesitate. And being polite is one thing, but saving your life is a lot bigger, you know? So, or all the things, you know, of a rape, you know, all the right. aftermath of dealing with a rape or something. It's just worth taking that initial quick step and knowing your own value and that you're worth saving.
Absolutely. And I think we often associate politeness with not setting boundaries, but like you said, like, can mm-hmm. I help you? Isn't necessarily rude. It's mm-hmm. setting your boundary, you know, yep. and then like you said, you can laugh about it and then you're seen as polite and, you know, but we don't necessarily always have to associate like giving in or saying yes with being polite. You can politely exactly. decline, just like when the waiter, you know, was asking during your
yeah.
no,
yes.
no week.
I tell you, it's amazing that people just don't care. I mean, you say no to them, they're like, oh, okay, and right. they just move on. And I'm thinking,
overthinking it.
Yeah, oh yeah, I had this whole story. And the other thing I used to do was over-explain everything. If I had to say no, right. then I had this, you saw my long text messages. Yes. I'm a talker, but I would write this huge, long explanation as to why I'm so sorry, da-da-da-da, right. and people were like, just say no. That's like, funny. What is your, yeah, why right. do you have to go talk so much? You know what I mean? So, yeah, setting a no, not needing an explanation or just being polite about it, but yeah. it doesn't have to be harsh or anything like that.
And one thing we didn't specify at the beginning that I meant to is attack, I think in this context, but really any, doesn't necessarily mean just the kind where you're walking down the street and Mm-mm. you're in the wrong place, wrong time. It can be in your house. It can be with somebody you love or somebody you know, and obviously most of the time it is. And so I think that's really important. Something that I wanted to ask you that kind of goes along the same line is it as common? I think a lot of people think that won't happen to me with mm-hmm. a lot of negative things.
Mm-hmm.
So is this something that's super common and people need to learn, or is it so devastating that it's like worth learning anyway?
I would say both, honestly. But yeah, 1 in 3 women will be attacked in their lifetime.
1 in 3. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And every 98 seconds, somebody's sexually assaulted.
Wow.
And then men make up 2/3 of the murder victims, so they're not to be discounted sure. either. And some of that, there's reasons for that. But the attacks are so common, and sexual assault and sexual abuse for children, you know, I mean, it is way more common than you think. And I can't remember the exact name of it, but have you heard of, there's a documentary on Netflix called The Hunting Ground, I think it's
no,
called. I think it's called The Hunting Ground. It's something very similar to that, yeah. if not. But they talk about colleges and how underreported rapes mm-hmm. are because it's bad publicity for the college.
Sure.
And so it's really fascinating how the administrators will actually sweep stuff under the rug and actually start going to the woman who got raped or sexually assaulted and say, well, what were you wearing? Were you drinking? And they start interrogating her, and they won't encourage her to go get a rape kit, you know, from the hospital and things like that. And so, I mean, it's really a big problem. And so just looking at that documentary and just colleges alone, you know, it's extremely important. That's one of my favorite groups to teach is girls or guys that are about to head off to college. You know what I mean? Because they're away from their parents. Sometimes there's more drinking, obviously. They don't have all this, you know. So the attackers all of a sudden have this rush of freedom as well, and they tend to cross boundaries, right? And so, and then I talk a lot about, you know, really how to, like, the difference between if a guy is at a party and he's drunk and he's getting a little handsy, you don't need to necessarily break his nose.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just need to get him off of you and set a boundary. And if he's still crossing your boundary, then there's a different approach. But versus somebody grabbing you and throwing you down or something like that, that's a whole different approach. So it's really important. But it's so common, and it's underreported beyond belief. I didn't talk about my...
I was going to say, I'm sure a lot of people have shame and embarrassment.
Mm-hmm. Shame, embarrassment. There's
fear, and
yes. And when you think about, like, I used to be a pharmaceutical rep, and I did have a doctor. I actually have literally never told anybody this publicly, but we were supposed to go in a running group, and I got to his house, and he had canceled everybody else, and it was just me there. And he pushed me up against the just lightly, but he pushed me up and tried to kiss me. And he's married. I was in his house where his wife and children live, you know what I mean? It was absolutely disgusting. And he'd gotten it away with stuff like that so many times. So I actually shoved him off of me. He still has a dent, I'm sure, in his stainless steel refrigerator because that's where I pushed him. But I said, there was no signal that I gave you that was okay. And I left. And then he called me right afterwards and said an absolute crude comment I shouldn't say publicly, but he just basically said, hey, you should call me later for some sexual stuff, you know? And he had no remorse. I was a lot younger then, but that was one of those situations where he's a very powerful man. Mm-hmm. He was running a whole huge hospital system, and I was scared to go public with that because you see those situations where, he's a doctor with a lot of money. This girl's just trying to press charges to get money out of him, and then you get your name dragged through the mud. And that's just a real concern for women, you know what I mean? And so it's way more underreported than we would ever think. So we say 1 in 3 women will be attacked.
Right,
it's probably way more.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep, that's absolutely
crazy. I think you make such a great point because I think that, I mean, with all of the, you know, Me Too and a lot of the stuff in the news, which we won't get too much into, but I think it is probably some people assume that, like, yeah, a drunk guy at a party is, like, not the same, this shouldn't be taken as the same as being attacked, obviously. And I think some people assume that we're lumping those together, which we're not.
Mm-mm.
But that reminds me of a question that I wanted to ask you is, how do you identify the difference between following your gut feeling and being, like, paranoid? Because I think there's a healthy balance there. So how do you encourage people to identify the difference between every guy you see when you're walking to the grocery store is like a threat versus actually knowing when to maybe reconsider your circumstances?
Yes. You know, that's a fantastic question. And that is a real thing, paranoia. And I think, like I said, after my attack, I think for about 1.5 to 2 years, I was constantly looking over my shoulder, and everybody was an enemy. I was like, that will never happen to me again, kind of thing. Even though I came out of the attack okay, it was emotionally scarring. Sure. And so I did deal with some paranoia. I had a severe fear of home invasions after that. Then there's the fear that comes up that's natural. But then there is, I say that in a lot of my seminars, that I am a very, very aware now, but I'm not paranoid. And what I actually did hypnosis. I saw a hypnotist to help me get over my fear of home invasions, which worked brilliantly.
Mm-hmm.
And again, part of it was knowing my own value and understanding, like I said before, I had 2 second-degree black belts way back in college, but I still had that paranoia lasting past that. And so again, that was just the mindset part of things, that once I started to understand my own value and realize I would be willing to fight for myself, the paranoia died down and the awareness kicked up. Like, you know,
that's huge.
Yeah, it just was. And so I think when I was just walking around very insecure with myself, paranoia took over. And
that's
when I was,
good.
And it's not that I think I'm invincible, you know, guns are a very controversial topic, but some people have guns in their home, some people don't. I do happen to have one, right? And it's not something you're supposed to share publicly, but I'm doing it anyway for you. With that, a lot of people have over confidence that they have a gun in the house. And it's just a tool, just like a stun gun is a tool, and
just
it can
like
fail. And
black belt moves.
That's exactly right. It is just a tool. And so really getting it in my head that, okay, I have to rely on my gun. And that was almost a paranoid feeling versus, okay, if my gun is where I keep it and I happen to be in a different room in the house and an intruder came in, I know I have my exact plan. Like if I'm in my kitchen, I know exactly what tools I would grab. If I get chased into my bathroom, I know exactly what tools I would grab. And I stage stuff. I teach people to stage their homes properly for that. So there's just that awareness. The paranoia dies down when you have a plan and when you start to understand your own value. That's how it worked for me.
That's so good. I mm-hmm. love that. I listened to a podcast one time with a gentleman who leads some kind of self-defense classes, and
sure.
I totally can't remember the podcast, but I'll find it, and I'll
sure.
link it here because it's really good. And something that this gentleman said was, I think that I used to be very paranoid in college, and like every time I would leave, I went to Arizona State, which mm-hmm. is huge,
mm-hmm.
And I was on the Tempe campus the first half of that, and so when it was like nighttime and I would leave the library, I would just call the, you know, the police on campus. And they mm-hmm. would walk you to your car. And a lot of people didn't utilize that. And I was like hyper aware
mm-hmm.
and almost to a fault, right? Like it was paranoia. And I heard this gentleman on this podcast say, once you develop confidence instead of paranoia, it puts your mind at ease.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not like you're constantly in this state of like, what who's around the corner? What's
yes.
going, you know, I can't walk down there. It gives you this sense of like calmness,
mm-hmm.
which seems almost counterintuitive,
mm-hmm.
But it was so cool. And I actually went and took a self-defense class after I heard that.
Good
that
for
so
you.
Inspired. But
absolutely.
It is really cool. And I feel like it's offered a lot more now as it's gaining some traction.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I couldn't agree more with the confidence helping paranoia die yeah. down. That's such a huge deal because that comes with the plan and comes with all that. And just piggybacking on what you just said about security, I just can't say that enough. Like, just utilize security guards. You know, it doesn't have to be out of paranoia, but just that's
again,
just
like
being smart at
right.
that point. Yeah, and so the security guards, and we were filming some of the video shoot in a parking garage, and the security came walking through, and I said, "Hey, you're exactly who we're talking about right
yeah.
now." So,
I'm glad you care about what's going on.
Yeah, and he was genuinely because
right.
we were sitting on the stairs
well,
getting ready.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
exactly, that's their job, and they don't want to be sitting in an office.
No.
Being bored, like go.
Probably adds value to their
yeah,
life.
Yeah, exactly.
Know that they helped a woman get to her car safe
exactly,
or a gentleman or whatever.
That's exactly right. So I would use them all you can, and also just know your surroundings. Of you know, if there's any panic buttons anywhere, like in a parking garage, there's all those buttons that you can
yes.
push to call security and things like that. So being aware of the surroundings, but paranoia it can definitely die down as confidence builds for sure.
Yeah, I remember. I don't even remember where I learned it now, but I remember when I was in college, somewhere taught me to know your exits in lecture halls,
mm-hmm.
and so
mm-hmm.
I used to sit like with an easy access to an exit.
Good for
and
you.
I remember thinking about people that would sit in like the far corner away from the exit in the front row, and I would be like, man, if something happened, like you're in trouble,
mm-hmm.
you know. But and it's not stressful to think about that,
mm-hmm.
you know. It just gives you that little extra level of confidence, like, hey, I'm in a better position than I could be if something
mm-hmm.
goes wrong here.
Yeah.
And, like, why not?
I know. You know, when you form new habits, you forget about the habit. You just do it. And that is, there's so many, like, over the years, so many little things. Like, if I'm in a restaurant, if I possibly can, I'll put my back against the wall.
Perfect.
Yeah, instead of put my back facing the front door. Because
yeah.
you just want to be able to just very
see
lightly see. Yeah,
restaurant.
So I love corners and being able to see, but corners with easy access to exits,
sure.
right? And so those little things, I tell you, they're just simple, but, you know, you just start to,
just like
with you, you start changing your eating habits little by little, and
yep.
all of a sudden it just turns into a lifestyle change. It doesn't have to be this big, abrupt thing. Same thing with self-defense and just feeling, you know, building your confidence and things like that.
Sure.
It just comes from just learning little tricks and applying them
yeah.
over time,
which is perfect. So I was just going to get into the tangibles, but on that note, are there any other little things you do when you go out to the mall or go to a restaurant
mm-hmm.
Or kind of on a daily basis, which might be hard to think of because obviously now they're habits and lifestyle lifestyle shifts, but are there other little tiny things that you do on a regular basis?
One is I never have distractions in my hands, and I just don't. I don't ever, you'll never see me walking with my phone and like typically looking at it unless I've really checked my surroundings already and I just need to text somebody quickly. But people walk into manholes. I mean, they're walking down the streets of New York and they fall down in a manhole.
Yeah.
So you see what distractions are doing
right.
to people. But that is, like I said, one of the things attackers look for is that the person's distracted. So one of the things, put my phone away, and then I look every single person in the eyes. That's another thing they do. Attackers don't want to be seen. And so when you're walking with confidence and you look, and it's polite to look people in the eyes and smile. When I was in college, I used to go for a run, and I used to count how many people would say hello back to me, you know, because I always said hi. And then I handed out that many hugs that day. That was just one of those funny little things I did. But I learned to start looking people in the eyes. And there was, you know, there were some homeless people, you know, milling around, and some people just really shy away. And I would just acknowledge them, and they just really appreciated it. And so it's just a matter of looking people right in the eyes. And again, because attackers don't want to be seen. So I would say sitting with my back against the walls, putting my distractions away, and acknowledging every single person I see are just some real simple ones. Simple, but there's obviously a ton more. But
sure, yeah. And I'm sure you think of them too, like as the day goes on, like you're not even paying attention to them.
I know, they're so habitual at this point.
So getting into some of the really tangible stuff. So do you know what attackers are? I know we talked a little bit about they're looking for people that have kind of that victim vibe. Mm-hmm. But as far as houses or places or things like that, other than just somebody walking down the street, what are things that attackers generally look for?
Yeah, you know? So that would be more like in the burglar line, which I've studied. I've studied in the mind of a burglar for years with this locksmith and security company. One of the things they look for is, well, for the simple basic things like, is their mail building up, or, you know, are their
which
lights
might
going?
Might not be simple to some
people. Yeah,
that's huge.
Yep. So, and just you know, having lights on a timer, things like that, to be able to, you know, or having a neighbor just walk into your house, you know, flip a light on and walk back out if you're on vacation. Something as simple as that can help deter attackers, because, you know, the burglars and attackers, they will, they'll case your home more than you think. And so you'll just won't know somebody's sitting in a car watching you for weeks, you know what I mean, sometimes. And a couple things is if you, like, because we're around the holidays at the moment, one of the things they'll do is actually go and look in your garbage right after Christmas or right after the holidays.
Go and see what you
they
got.
See exactly what you have.
Like, what
they see your TV boxes and this and that. And then they know, then they'll choose the houses based on what's in the garbage. So, so that's one thing. So some people will take their stuff to a dumpster.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then the other thing is just, you know, when you're going on vacation, people are always putting on social media. I'm about to leave my house for a whole week, you guys, so burglars, pay attention, you know what I mean? And so I happen to always have a house sitter come to my house. That's just one of my things I do, you know what I mean? But I do not post any vacation pictures while I'm on vacation. I don't post that I'm going on vacation. It's just I keep everything off social media, because these burglars will look at your house, they'll see your routine, they'll go check out your social media, which is very easy to find.
And even if it's private, mm-hmm. I mean, everything is...
Yes. Yeah, exactly. There's ways. Totally. And they'll find the public profiles.
Right.
But then also, like, the Nextdoor app, they case the Nextdoor app, and they see what's being talked about. Oh, there's a burglary here. And so they know to stay away from certain areas. It's very...
Oh, wow. I'm not familiar with the Nextdoor app.
Nextdoor app, yeah. That is... It's a fantastic app. It just, you put your address in and it shows you all these people are chatting in the neighborhood, like, hey, I got my car broken into, or yeah. And just different, I mean, it's just security, but a lot of times, like, if a dog is lost or a cat, I lost my dog, or I found a dog, and then they connect back through the Nextdoor app. There's so much chatter that goes on there.
But if the wrong person pops in.
But yeah, you run the risk of a burglar or an intruder or an attacker casing you and what you're talking about, what's important to you, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, just, yeah. So I just would keep it off of social media, please. You know, I know we want to connect that way, but the people, just text them to your friends.
Yeah,
text them to the most important people, and then put it on social media afterwards.
Do you think, another thing on the lights is I've heard leaving a radio or a TV on, something small like that.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the other one I was going to ask? House sitting.
I know one is, they did a whole study with burglars and how they case homes, and one of the things is with dogs.
Oh,
they are way nice. Really?
Yep.
Well, there
well,
we
that
go.
And that and security systems.
Okay.
So
yeah. Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. But they're actually more. I believe very strongly in security systems. But one of the things, they're actually more deterred by a beware of dog sign than a security sticker, because they do know people's habits is they don't turn their security systems on all the time. Please turn your security systems
can't turn
on.
Your dog off.
But you can't turn your dog off, and if they hear a beefy bark coming, even a little one, but even if
or
they hear
the sign, maybe
and I do, I have a beware of dog sign, and I tell people, even if you don't have a dog, throw a beware of dog sign right on your, you know, either your fence or in your front window or something like that, because they are more deterred by that. They will run away. They'll walk in with an alarm system going off and still burglarize you.
Wow.
If they walk up and hear a dog barking, they run the other direction.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's startling, actually. I'm shocked. But they're brazen. They're bold. They do stuff. And the most common times for people to break into your home are between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m.
I've heard that because you're away from home, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like at work or
Yep, exactly. Because, most people are away from the house.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So, it's just a matter of knowing. And one extra tip, just for the fun of it, is that burglars can actually push in on your garage door if you have a house. And so they push in on the top of the garage door. They take a little coat hanger and they reach into that pull cord, the cord that's hanging from your garage door. And they just pull it, and it all of a sudden what am I trying to say?
It's like when it's broken. And
it disconnects it. Yep, exactly. Yeah. So it disconnects it. And so you don't need the garage door opener anymore. So they just slip it right open. And a lot of people don't lock the internal garage door that goes to their house. They're just used to the garage door being the security, the big one. So, they'll get in and have full access to your home. And it literally, because our locksmiths test this stuff so we can educate on it, and they can get in there and into your garage in about 10 to 15 seconds by doing that. And so it's – and then if somebody pulls a work van in your – driveway, and they're doing that, and if you were just driving by and seeing that, burglars don't always look like burglars, and attackers don't always look like attackers.
Sure.
Ted Bundy, for example, he was suave and smooth and handsome and
sometimes
wooed the ladies.
Women, and we don't always assume.
Oh, absolutely.
Women, my mom used to tell me about, if you see somebody, like a woman on the side of the road, like, don't pull over, A, because, like, what can I really do to help them?
Mm-hmm.
But B, it doesn't mean that she doesn't have a gentleman with her or that she's just dangerous. I think sometimes we assume, oh, it's just a woman getting in their garage, so it can't be somebody burglarizing, or it's a woman on the side of the road who has to stop and help. And, I think it's probably going back to that gut feeling.
Absolutely. You're right on. Women do burglarize. Women do attack. The statistics are big. They're very lopsided with that. It's more men, but you can't discount the fact that it could be a woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And with sex trafficking, a lot of the women who are going and taking the little poor kiddos, they are women because they look more trustworthy, So it is a matter of being aware of that.
It's crazy.
I know.
So what's your vision for the future of this project that you're working on now, and kind of what are you working on next, and where do you see this going? Like, what is your kind of 1,000-square-foot view and goal of making an impact with this passion project you're working on?
Absolutely. I learned all of my martial arts in a dojo, which is wonderful, and not everybody's going to be able to go to it for time purposes, and sometimes it's intimidating, although they're wonderful, but and so I am really more about, instead of martial arts so much, it's really about the self-defense side of things, the quick, down, and dirty, how to get away from someone, the mindset behind it. And so my goal is to get this out, digitally, and have people be able to consume this stuff while they're sitting in their homes with their families and things like that. So we're 90% finished with the whole project. And then I've been speaking my whole life with this. And so I would love to be able to go on either college campuses and do big talks, or, just different corporations. If one person gets raped or assaulted in a corporate setting, the whole production shifts, or the productivity shifts, because people don't want to stay late, and they don't want to show up early because they want to be with people, or there's a lot more talk around the water cooler, things like that. So it affects the bottom line of corporations more than anything. So I would love to speak in corporate settings again, and even schools, just for children and stranger danger. I used to teach, my favorite was teaching 4 to 6 year olds stranger danger, and just how, what to yell if somebody picked them up, and don't just throw a tantrum because it's just going to look like a parent holding a child. I teach them to yell fire, fire, first of all, because help scares people away.
But fire, people look.
Yeah, and they at least will look. And then the second thing they yell is, he's not my dad, or she's not my mom.
Because so they don't assume that it's...
Yeah. It's just a child throwing a tantrum. Yep, exactly.
It's simple stuff, but people would never think of that.
It is. And so that's what I want to do, is just create, and I'm just about finished with creating a whole curriculum about it. So I can reach the masses and put it out, instead of just having, 10 people in a seminar. Right. I've taught thousands too, but just, it just is, I just want to be able to get it out there. And it doesn't, the big thing is, I think the misconception is that people have to go to a dojo for 5 years before they can defend themselves. You can defend yourself on day one, and I'm proof of it. I just learned those three moves. So sometimes it just doesn't have to be fancy. It just is knowing where to strike, where the sensitive areas are on the body, how to avoid it in the first place.
Practical.
So exactly, practical things, just where to run to, what to do. There's even phone apps that you could use too, that GPS locate you. Emerge 911. Emerge 911 is one of them, where if you got chased into a closet or whatever it has.
Call like certain people?
Yep, so you can set up contacts. Yeah, so it actually sends a text message out and a message to the police, and it literally has your GPS location, and it would say, you could write what it is, but it says, Tiffany's in trouble. She's at this address. And so two things could happen is the police would just dispatch somebody to you. But the other thing is, if you want that to happen, let's just say you're feeling uncomfortable with somebody and your gut's saying, okay, I need to get out of this situation, but if I remove myself, he's going to know. So you can't pick up the phone and be like, hey, I got this really creepy guy next to me, you know what I mean? And so so one of the things you can do is not send it to 911 unless you want to, and you could just send it to your contacts, and they'll get this text, and then they'll immediately want to call you. So then you pick up the phone and say, you know, oh, so-and-so got in a car accident. Okay, I'm sorry, I had a family emergency, and it's your excuse to leave.
Yes.
So you can use apps in that way as well that don't have to involve 911. But it is just a matter of having a plan with that. You know, like my goal is to just compartmentalize things. If you're in your house, here's the top three things you need to do. Stage your home, this and that, you know. And if you're out and about, here's the top three things you want to do. And I just want to make it very simple. And then all of our body types are different, you know. And so for my body type, being 5'4 and whatever, I would never try to get a man in a shoulder lock, for example, because if I just don't do it perfectly, it's just going to be his muscle against mine. So I teach women or people in general just to figure out the techniques that just feel right to you. And so I have my top 3 to 5 that I would turn to. If I were ever attacked again, I know exactly the handful that I would choose between. So you don't have this whole years of all this curriculum. Because people will hesitate because they're like, I don't know which one to choose here. I know so much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of simplifying self-defense. It doesn't have to be so overwhelming.
That's so great.
Yeah.
And I feel the same exact way about nutrition and fitness, and there's so many things in our life that there's so much information out there, but it doesn't have to be complicated. Knowing the top three practical things is going to make a huge
potentially
life-saving difference. That's so good.
Yes.
And you're such a good teacher. I was watching some of your Facebook videos. And,
oh, thank you.
You give such good cues. Like one of the things that you said, and I'm sure I'm going to screw it up, was about like keeping your hand really sturdy. And you're like, you should feel it down to your elbow.
And
I was like, what a great way for me to know if my hand is sturdy enough.
Yes.
You know, because a lot of these people that will probably take your course and people that you're trying to impact don't know what they're looking for. So you say their hand's sturdy and they're like, all right, I think I got it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but saying, so you should feel it down your elbow. It's like, oh, okay, now I know I got it.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. Thank you so much. I'm very, very into the details, but I only like to give enough details for people to feel like not overwhelmed with it.
Right.
So, but that is really, really important. And I've seen people, you know, I've been doing this for so many years, but I've seen people throw a strike like that without that happening and it doesn't work as well.
Your hand.
Yeah, it doesn't feel good. Yeah. And it just kind of flops on the person. It's not as effective. So I'll just go through the things that are most effective, even though there's 8 billion details to every technique.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And then there's always more information and out there, you know, and you have tons of information that if people pass the simple stuff and want to dive into more.
Absolutely. Well, and that's the whole thing with my curriculum. I'm starting off very basic.
Yeah.
I would start people on their journey very basic, going through the details. And then we start to use those same techniques and build on, okay, so now what if the person has a knife? And then you take that same technique and you practice it over and over again. So each time I'll be adding a little bit of details. So it turns into, in a sense, like with your nutrition, a lifestyle change as you learn.
Yep.
So you just build over time. And then, you know, when you're finished with the curriculum, you feel very, very, even day one, you'll feel a lot more confident than when you, beforehand. So,
Well, before I get into my last question, where can people find out about your course? Where can they find you online or on social to stay up to date and get in touch with you?
Yeah. You know, the best ways right now is because I'm pumping out so much content is on Facebook. It's just at Armstrong Self Defense. And then on Instagram, it's Tiffany_D as in Dawn, _ Armstrong. And you can find me there. I'm putting content on there as well. And then my website is just about done. It's TiffanyArmstrong.net, and that will be live in the middle of January 2019. So
awesome.
Yeah.
I will link all of that in the show notes so people can find you nice and easily.
Thank you.
And before I let you go, what do you believe are the ingredients of a healthy life?
You know, I truly believe just getting to know yourself. I think so many times we are a different person behind closed doors than we are out in public. We kind of put on this face, and really trying to find that congruence within yourself. And that comes from doing whatever it takes in your life, setting whatever up you need to set up to really understand your own value and understand that, you know, your life is worth saving, first of all, but you're just worth it, you know, whatever it is in your life, you know what I mean? Health and nutrition, and you're worth working out and eating better and making better choices in life. So I think just really trying to get to know yourself, whether that's through personal development or something else, reading some books. I read a book every 2 weeks, you know, business or health and nutrition or anything else. But just really trying to understand yourself. And so you can just be congruent out in public, just like you are behind closed doors. And you just find, you find the best version of yourself and live it.
I love it. So
yeah.
Good. Thank you so much for being here.
Of course. Thank you. You are amazing.
Thank
really
you.
Appreciate
we
all
so
that you're doing.
Before you head out, just a few quick things. Any links or recommendations discussed in this interview are in the show notes of this episode, so you can find those there. Secondly, if you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast because I have lots of good stuff coming and I don't want you to miss out. This episode is made possible by Hey Presley Nutrition, which is my nutrition coaching company that provides an incredibly unique, sustainable, and personal approach to reaching your goals. To support the podcast and take control of your health, head over to heypresley.com to learn more about my monthly coaching, and don't forget to enter podcast as your promo code, all one word, for a discount on your first month. Lastly, thank you so much for tuning in. And if you have any questions for me, suggestions for the show, or just want to spread the love, find me on Instagram at Hey Presley or head over to heypresley.com/podcast. Until next time, continue living your healthiest, happiest life, and we'll chat soon.